Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
Success. That's a really interesting word, right?
Yes, sir.
And it can be equated to just about anything in life that you do. But today we're going to put it in the onus of the NBA playoffs, right?
All right.
Come on. Success. Season stars, they have all their favorites, of course, you know. The Lakers, was
Clippers.
To be there. The Clippers, the Nets. And now you have a situation where you got a bunch of young players that understand what success means.
Hungry.
And they're hungry, right? And the proof is what we're seeing right now about giving people an opportunity to be successful. And the two coaches that come to mind is Nate McMillan, who is an interim.
Yes, right? Sir.
Does not have the title as head coach. Newly named head coach, Monty, out in Phoenix, have created a situation that I think all coaches in the NBA has got to take a step back and say, wow, look at what they've accomplished. They are successful, right?
Yes, they are.
And they've allowed their players to be successful. And the television loves it.
Man, okay,
the ratings are off the charts, man.
If you got me up watching a West Coast game, because I don't watch whole games.
Okay.
I haven't watched whole games probably since LeBron them beat Golden State.
Golden State.
In the playoffs. I haven't watched the whole game. I usually just watch the ESPN highlights. But I'm going to tell you now, when I seen Atlanta play the Knicks and how they put it on the Knicks, I was like, that's trouble.
Yeah.
And then when I seen the way Devin Booker approached the playoffs, I said, some people in trouble.
Okay.
So then, but it also, like you said, it goes back to the balance of those two coaches. And I'm going to give Nate McMillan a big shout out because Indiana hit him with the one and done.
Yeah. And okay. That's good.
Racist area, though. We know that.
Okay. Yeah. He didn't fit. That wasn't a good fit for him.
Farm boy style. Wasn't a good fit. They don't want the malice and the mayhem to come back in Indiana. So they always try to control the culture that they put on that team, and they lose players all the time. It's a vacuum now.
Yeah, you don't have a successful franchise, right? And it's never going to be a successful franchise as we see it. They'll sell tickets, right?
Because it's a basketball state.
Yeah, they don't sell tickets. But let's talk about how many NBA championships they're going to win.
Zero.
Okay.
That's they simple, had their heyday.
Yeah.
Zero.
So Atlanta, definitely a progressive area. Great spot for Nate to be in. Great spot. Phoenix, same thing, man.
Yep.
Another great spot. So those two franchises, I think, are about to make and, you know, again, they really didn't have that big three, right?
No, they didn't.
Or the, you know, maybe one guy.
I'm going to share with you this. The remaining three of the four teams have African-American coaches, but also three of the four teams play with the conventional style.
Mm-hmm.
Point guard, shooting guard,
yep.
Big man,
yep.
Superior wings.
Two wings, yep.
That form of basketball is so fun. And I'm going to give somebody else a shout out. The Hood MVP is Chris Paul.
Chris Paul.
No chick, Joker, whatever. You had a great season. You did a good job. You missed your boy Jamal. He didn't play. I understand that.
Right.
But D. Chris Paul is MVP. And this is why he's the MVP. When he didn't play, his value showed that he taught campaign how to play his role.
Yep. Absolutely. His mark, his fingerprints was awesome. All over that series, right?
That's a point guard right there.
Yeah.
That's what point guards do.
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm not there, you're still going to learn from what I've taught you. So you're absolutely right, man.
That's fun.
Yeah, and you got to remember who, you know, none of these guys were coaches of the year, right?
None of them. What did you mention, man? Come on. They was, what, Monty? Yeah, Phoenix, they never did. Nate McMillan, former average player, they average role players. What the hell? They don't
have took
no
over
man.
Losing. They were losing, man. They had a losing record, right?
When both
they took
squads.
Over. Atlanta.
Yep.
And look at them now. In Western Conference Championship, man.
Yep.
Or Eastern Conference,
right? That's right.
Yeah.
Then you got the castaway superstar in Trae Young because when Atlanta traded him, traded when Dallas drafted him, and Atlanta asked for Trey. It's like, we won't trade. And like, why would you get rid of Luka? He's been a pro since he was 12.
Yeah.
But he ain't never been out the first round. First year you let this young brother walk through the door.
He putting up some numbers, man. It's extremely impressive.
So. And impressive about him, he making them dismantle the process in Philly. Everybody's job is on the line because of Trae Young.
Yeah. Everybody looking for work.
When they see him on the streets, and think about it, every Jimmy done played, he been spit on in New York.
Yeah.
He's been mistreated. And you know what he do? He pushing, doing push-ups in the middle of the floor. He laughing. He pointing at people. Say, this is what we play for. This is what
giving
we do.
Giving him the thing about being quiet. You know?
He said, I love this. I want this.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for this. Man,
it's fun. I enjoy it.
The personalities are real, Tony. The people are real. The emotion is real. And it's just, it reminds me of when I really love watching pro basketball. I got to go all the way back to the 90s.
Yeah, man, the Bad Boys.
Yep, Bad Boys. Isaiah Thomas was the first person that sparked my interest, and then I always gravitated to small point guards, the Kevin Johnsons, the Kenny Andersons,
Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah, Muggsy Bogues. Even I was a little kid, I thought he was an action figure, so I'm like, how is he out there doing that?
Right.
You know, but then it created that camaraderie where you really was like, this is my franchise. And right now, it's that camaraderie is there. People are so passionate about their team. Like the guy that was in Denver, and he said, done in four. And they tried to fight him, and he ended up beating all the people up and tried to fight him. He gave everybody a two-piece with a biscuit. It was like 3 or 4 guys. He was like, boo, boo. And then Devin Booker got his seats to the to the playoff games. He got tickets now. They're all the home games. So I need to find that guy.
Love it, man.
That guy a real fan.
Yep.
Oh, man, this is
fun, good. Man.
Yep,
fun. Basketball is fun again.
Yep. It is, definitely. So,
in the Supreme Court ruling, the NCAA now has to compensate players
for
their likeness and their images, which could mean a multiple things, right?
Yes, sir.
It could actually be monetary. It could be extended educational opportunities.
Internships,
you know, graduate degrees. So, long overdue.
Car.
Okay. Hey, man, the gloves
apartment. Are off. You own a company. Y'all got apartments on campus. You got condos. You can give me a corporate lease when I'm in school. Instead of a dorm, I got the corporate lease and a luxurious condominium.
Yeah, and you remember back when the Ohio State football team got put on probation because they wanted to sell their jerseys and
running back.
Yeah, to make ends meet.
He'll be in the NFL today.
Yeah, it's a violation of their rules.
Who was that brother's name? He was like LeBron in football.
That was the quarterback.
Yep, and the running back. They had a running back. Quarterback did it, and the running back did it. Man, Maurice Clarett for me.
Clarett and Pryor.
Yep, that's it, those two. And then when Pryor got to the NFL, he was like, we're going to make you a wide receiver. Yes. Quarterback too much attention for you, even though you could play it.
Played
because
it
what you did in college,
mm-hmm.
We can't let you get that stage.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
It's like that narrative. They try to crush that narrative. So here goes my argument. So what about the linemen, the defensive linemen and offensive linemen? How did it come today when their jersey not being? Ain't nobody going to the school store and say, let me get that offensive tackle jersey.
Right.
I mean, I ain't knocking them. I like
no.
A 99 looks sweet. 99 look cool. I got some friends that wore that number.
But I'm pretty sure there's a core group of people that would purchase that jersey, right? Family members, friends, cousins, relatives.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, I mean, there's still a market for it. It may not be as wider market as it is for your quarterback, running back, wide receivers, if you will. But given the opportunity, right? That's what we're talking about, land of opportunity.
Yes, right.
So now I have the opportunity as a lineman to use my jersey as a means to make additional income. Yep. And why not?
Or like you said, or an endorsement deal.
Or endorsements, yeah.
You got an endorsement deal with State Farm, and now you want a State Farm commercial at the halftime of your game that you're playing in.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Okay. All college students have intern jobs, right? Why athletes any different?
Yep, look at the athletes that have lost scholarships because somebody done bought them some groceries.
Right. Or took them to eat. I mean, Chris Webber talked about walking down the street, seeing his jersey sitting in a sporting goods store for sale, But yet, no one could come and take him to lunch because there was a violation of NCAA rules. Now, is that crazy or what?
And they starving eating ramen noodles. I remember Jalen Rose saying that story.
Yeah.
And like Jalen Rose said, I needed my teeth worked on when I was in college. And he said, my mouth looked like crack house. So they was hollering crack house, not because I got caught one, because my mouth was like one.
Right.
And he said, nah, I got this. And I made it to the NBA. I was able to do some things for my skin, because he said he had bad skin and bad denture.
And look at him now. He's on ESPN with his own show.
Yep.
Got a podcast.
Everybody screenshot the Jalen Rose fade, too, don't they?
Yeah. They all talking about who their barber is, man. His barber is famous, man.
Yeah, his barber is famous. Some brother out of the D, he fly him in, but look at that. Look at the brother going from not wanting to have hair because it probably was either too coarse or he just, because he growing up in the, you know, in,
right, he didn't have any time. Money to buy the hair goods, man. So
to groom himself and pay the barber to make sure he's right. So, yeah,
that's great.
That's kudos for the college athletes and
Supreme Court finally got it right.
Yeah, they getting it right.
A lot of things they haven't gotten right, but this one here, we got to give them credit for it, man, for getting it right.
And then, like, you know, because NCAA is, and everybody thinks like NCAA, they're a private funded organization,
just like the Michigan High School Athletic Association.
Tell it, okay? They're making money,
and they should be next.
That should be next.
All right.
That's right.
Stop handcuffing these high school coaches trying to get their
athletic directors.
Athletic directors trying to get their players exposure so they can get to the next level and get lucrative now.
Yes.
Scholarships.
Because we stuck, like, in Michigan, like, if Coach Guy or Coach Stewart or Coach Walker and them, if they want to go out and play out of the state, they can't. Who going to come to Michigan?
Yep.
In the wintertime, they ain't coming. But if you're down in Florida and say, oh, we're about to go to South Carolina.
Yeah,
we're going to go play Miami
in a tournament down there. Yeah.
Like, oh, you got school. No, it's
winter break.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's winter break.
And we're down. We're going to play five games against five number one teams
in
different states. And it's going to be 30 D1 coaches there. And one of my kids is going to get off and get a Division I scholarship.
If not more than one, there'll be others that get other offers. So, but it's about exposure, man.
And so it's just, and then when you think about policy, the pushback is, hold up, it's only one right way. This is not the written rule. And if you're not functioning like this, you're breaking the law. Because if we're not benefiting off your athletic prowess, if we're not getting 99, you get 1%, it's a problem there.
Yes, it is. So I would hope that there's a group that would like to take this issue to the Michigan State Supreme Court to back down the Michigan High School Athletic Association. Too much power.
Yeah, even with the gate when the playoffs or the game.
Oh, they get all that money, man.
That's why you have these high school teams got to have big concessions.
Yeah, that's the only way you can get it. You can't even sell. During playoffs, you can't even sell your school paraphernalia. It can be nothing sold during that time unless it's MHSA type of gear. But we can't do that. Our souvenir shop is not open during playoffs.
Wow.
So you know, those kinds of things, man, makes no sense at all. And in this day and age of world commerce, those kind of controls are definitely outdated and need to be challenged and changed.
Yeah. So look, talking about challenge and change, we're looking at this big thing with this critical race theory. It's everywhere right now, right?
Okay.
And it's to the point it's everywhere where it's starting to hit areas like we just talked about, sports, schools, community. And it's almost to the point that I feel like the people that has received so much privilege from practicing racist things and for coming from racist societies, it's like they almost don't want to be reminded of how they benefited in society. So don't go around teaching that somebody struggled, somebody suffered, or don't teach those things. I'm part of this teacher Facebook page, right? And, you know, a lot of stuff is done online when it comes to Plato and making up classes and coursework, right? And I got two stories behind this. So there's a question on there that says, I won't say the slave trade, because see, what the critical race theory argument is, don't mention slavery and things like that. During the cotton expansion or the cotton trade, what were some of the drawbacks for the African Americans during that trade? So here's the wrong answer. Here's the right answer. some of the farmers worked hard during that time and didn't make that much money off their crop. Mm-hmm. The wrong answer was people had to give up their culture and their names and their freedoms. Mm-hmm. Because due to slavery. That was the wrong answer.
No doubt.
The right answer, they said, was the farmers had to make a lower wage. I was like, who was a farmer? That was African during the cotton trade. Who was a farmer?
No. Presidents, right? Presidents owned slaves. All right? So if we're talking about hierarchy and ownership of slaves, it doesn't get any higher than that, than the president. And this country was built
on the back of somebody else.
On the backs of slavery. And if you don't think so, then you really don't get it.
But look, listen to this. Listen to the pushbacks. We got places like Nevada where they threatening school board members. Mm-hmm. They threatening teachers and say, look, we're going to have to make sure when the school year starts, we're going to have to put a video camera on you to make sure you're not teaching anything about how I benefited off bias. So there better not be no critical race theory being brought up in these classes about how somebody was enslaved, how it was secret societies out there, how it's redlining, how it's how soldiers were treated in World War II,
okay,
Vietnam, civil rights. Don't teach none of that. If you get caught, you getting fired.
You're getting fired.
So they're pushing to pass bills in certain states to make sure that's not taught.
That's called American history. Okay? It's American history. So what you're telling these educators is you can't tell the truth about American history or it'll cost you your job. That's basically what they're saying. But I just came back from Gullah Land down in South Carolina.
So you down in the muddy grass.
And what I witnessed while I was there were schools that were open at that time for free slaves. And I had a discussion with a historian about the land that was stolen during a lot of the massacres that took place, which never was taught.
Oh, never taught. In our school,
okay? It's a shame that many black people...
The 13th Amendment.
...were adults before they found out about Rosewood Massacre, before they found out Black Wall Street Massacre, because it was never told. It was never talked about. And it's not even talked about in those communities. But the thing that was so eye-opening was the fact that there's still a lot of history. These people refused to give up the lifestyles of West Africa. That's what Gullah is. These people still cook the same. They learn about their culture, their history. And the message behind it is, if you don't know where you're from, you have no idea where you're going.
Exactly. Okay?
And that's what has to be taught to all people. Okay? And if we don't do that, then we're just fooling ourselves. We're setting ourselves up for failure. But it was so eye-opening, man. And I kind of, not really a big historian about the lifestyles for West Africa, but it really changed how I think about the history of black people in America. Yeah. And it's really eye-opening, man. Gullah Land, it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, my travels when I got a chance to travel to Ghana. And it's on the equator.
Yeah.
It's West Africa, right? So it's on the equator. And as I'm there and I'm waking up, the sun beaming. It's like 12 o'clock sun. At 6 o'clock in the morning. And then the sun go down, at 6 o'clock. It's done. But when I get up, I'm seeing all these people with their shirts off, guys jogging by the lake, by the ocean. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, in shape. Fruit, water, fruit, hustling, proud of who they are. And I'm like, when I got back, I said, I'm going to jog on the lake.
Okay.
I'm going to start doing that. And because it was just a blessing seeing so many people that look like me.
Yeah. So who gets discriminated in that kind of atmosphere, right? Where's the discrimination?
There ain't no serious discrimination. There wasn't none. The whole time I was there, wasn't no discrimination.
Right.
People, I could walk up to anybody when I was in Ghana. Like, hey, what's going on? What is it? Oh, brother, you American? What is this? I'm going to sell you something. I got this.
Right.
But.
Economics.
It wasn't no hating.
Right.
No hating at all.
Didn't have to worry about getting arrested for running on the beach.
Nothing. You know, say something to a woman. Wasn't no 3.0 Katie's out there or anything. It was okay. Becky's. It was like, hey. How you doing? Can you show me? Oh, come here. Come here with us.
Absolutely, man. Tonight.
Like, wow, this is love.
Okay.
So it just takes the argument. And then I had another example about critical race theory. Because somebody asked me, said, if you could explain it, if it's not taught where people will learn about their history, what would it look like? Somebody asked me that. And I was like, all right. So we're reading this book called So You Want to Talk About Race. It's about this young lady that's born in this mixed family that's Nigerian and Caucasian, but she's also an atheist, and she's part of the LGBTQ community.
Wow. What a
mixture. We read it with our church, right? So it's a mixture, right? Yeah. So I got enough time. So it's real quick. So she's in an elementary school in Seattle, Washington. So you got to think, predominantly white neighborhood region, right? Mother's white, dad's Nigerian, but she's in a single parent home. She's in about the sixth grade, all white school, only black girl. Her brother in the kindergarten, all white classroom, only black boy. All right? So she in the hallway one day, and these little girls walk past, and they say, ah, your brother homeless. Now, they were homeless in real life, right? It was transitioning. Okay. They said, my brother homeless? She thinking, like, how y'all know? So the point comes out in the class, the brother never says anything. Teacher does an incentive-based program where all the students in the class get money for their behaviors, doing their classwork, participating in group work, doing presentations and everything. Now, if you got to think about when it comes to critical race theory, the African-American boy, black boys are a lot of times subject to either being aggressive, having ADHD, being misdiagnosed, mm-hmm. right? This young lady's probably a couple of years younger than me, so she's in that era where that stuff happened. And a lot of times students get rolled up. So this guy's in class, and you have to pay rent for your desk with your behavior.
Okay, this is the money that you earn for your behavior, doing your classwork, yep. your homework. Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
And then you could go to the store at the end of the week and buy something if your rent paid. So she's trying to teach collective economics and community, which is really trying to teach.
Got it.
So now you got this little boy in the kindergarten that don't have no desk. Everybody else in the class.
Because he hasn't earned any money.
He in poverty, in class, no desk.
On the floor.
So when they got to do assignment, he on the floor. And everybody calling him homeless in class. Like, he homeless. He homeless. Now, thinking about, I done been in some financial situations as an adult in my early life where I know how that feels. In my 20s, so I'm like, man, imagine being 5 or 6 and somebody saying you homeless. And you really been homeless before.
Mm-hmm.
But they think like it's a game in class because they got this privileged mindset. Oh, he ain't got no desk. All he had to do is be good and be quiet. But a lot of times, people don't understand. Mama working 3 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's only his sister babysitting him. And when you got a problem, when you 5, because he drew a picture. He drew a picture. That's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
He drew a picture. And you know how you put a jersey on. He had a jersey on with the number 5 on it. It had a question mark above it. Like, I'm only 5.
Mm-hmm.
What you expect out of a little black boy that's 5 in a single-parent home?
In a very cultural, different environment. I never thought maybe he was doing the work. Maybe he never got paid because he was black. Maybe he didn't deserve to get paid. Who knows?
Was he getting the same helping class? But he wrote, he put a jersey on himself on the picture that I'm only 5. What you want me to do?
Right. That's a great analogy about life.
So when it comes to critical race theory, why I need to be taught, we go back to the things like redlining, driving while black, jogging while black, being on jobs where you're the only African-American male or woman,
mm-hmm.
or being in systems where people that are not around you. And you got to go not by the status quo. You got to be twice as good to get in the door. But then you got to make 69 cents to the dollar compared to your white counterparts.
Right. being passed over on promotions. Okay?
So that's
because of where you look.
Yeah, so that's what I seen. That teacher was actually teaching that to that little boy. And it's unfortunate she was teaching it.
Yeah.
He did learn something, though, because he ended up graduating. He didn't graduate from high school. When he got to, like, a grade where he could make his own decision, like 15 to 16, he dropped out of school, passed the GED test first time, ended up going to college, and got his MBA today.
Okay. Because
he was like, I got to get up out of this.
Right.
This ain't helping me at all.
Yeah. The environment was not conducive for him to learn how he needed to learn.
Nice. Look, I ain't really stretched that out any longer.
We kind of, got kind of excited about that subject.
Yes.
But again, I think it still has relevance to the fact that, the storyline that we're talking about equates to our economic status.
Oh, yes,
it does. And how we should prepare ourselves and our children going forward.
Yep.
Can't change the past, but you need to learn about the past.
Yep. I was like, the article I had today, I said, how to fix your credit reports. So it's just basically, that's another way of critical race theory.
Okay.
When you think about credit, and you come from families that don't have credit history, and somebody got a 100-year head start on you, or they can make you an authorized user, or you say, I'll put my name, I'll co-sign for you. I got the down payment.
Yeah.
On your first home, don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So all those layers come into effect when somebody's trying to make either a career move, a relationship move, a health move, because you're talking about underserved communities. All these factors are the layers that they're affected by, and the one way they can hold it against you is your credit report.
In this day and age, credit means so much. Like I said, they even using it for jobs, right?
Yes.
If you got a bad credit score, it could cost you the opportunity to get a job. And we know what it does to you financially.
Yes.
Because if you have to go to the right way, $49 down and 28% interest, that's not how you get ahead.
That's right. And I wanted to, I'm gonna start with credit right here as we getting close to wrapping up. I want to say this. I tried a case study the other day. Because me and you always talk about this. I said, let me see how I feel to go into one of these situations with the subprime credit and how they treat somebody.
Oh, okay.
Right? So I did this because I had to take my wife's car into a dealership to get some work done. So the dealership across the street, I'm not going to name them, they mailed me some pool tabs, right? Well, you win a contest. So I read the language and it said three cars. It's like, oh, you win this car, you win this $100,000. And I was like, they're trying to pique somebody's interest. So I read the fine language, and they say, this is just to let you know you might win a prize like this, all right? Okay. That's what it said, basically. Somebody they walked around it. Like, this is not the actual winning piece, but for somebody that can't read, they catch them in the...
Get them in the door.
The spontaneous of the energy, get them in the door. So I said, let me go. So me and my wife talking, said, all you're going to get is probably a coffee cup. I say, I know. that's what I'm planning to get, a coffee cup. That's it. I say, I'm not going to buy a car. I just want to go in and see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that I live in a community where they mail these flyers out all the time, get somebody to trade their car in that ain't paid off, and overlap their credit.
Layer that credit on there, yep. Right?
Yep. Oh, my car payment only this. They got rid of my junker. They got rid of my, when I had bad credit on, my credit's going this now, but then you got this $500 car note on
for
the car.
6 years.
Yep, that car that ain't even worth the money. All right? No. So then I go in, I sit down, and I say, I won. I got these pool tabs. Okay. I said, I want a coffee cup. Like, the old man looked at me like, coffee cup? I said, yeah, that's the expectation I have leaving with today.
Mm-hmm.
A coffee cup.
Right. He didn't know how to take that.
He already knew. So he's sitting there. He said, what do you got? I said, well, I got these two vehicles. They've been paid off probably like 4 or 5 years now. And I said, I'm really enjoying not having no car note. I said, I've figured out how to save the money and learn to love people and not things. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to him like that. He looking at me like, damn. So then he look at the flyer, get my address, boom. And I said, guess what? Don't mail me anything. But let's see what I won.
Right.
So I said, oh, you got to reread it to me, don't you? Because it's not what I won on here. He looking at me like. So he take his phone out. And And he do like a little lottery thing, little the little slots. Say, touch this. I say, here I come, coffee cup. I touch it, and they give me $2. I say, yay. I got what I expected.
Yeah. And he came out and buy a coffee and cup so
he
for had, $2.
He went in his pocket, pulled $2 out. He said, right, have a nice day.
Wow.
But then when I walked in that room, I saw couples. Mm-hmm. I saw older people. It was packed.
Really?
It was a smorgasbord of tables. And I was thinking, I was like, is this a planned event for you to come in and get a car? Or a spontaneous event to do further damage to your credit history?
Yep. You got it.
Spontaneous is something that you do not do when you're dealing with your money.
No.
It's three areas I know their money go in. Need, want, and junk.
Okay. You know, and for a lot of people, the two major purchases that they will have in their lifetime is their home and their automobile. Those two purchases you do not make spontaneous.
So I'm not trying to get into a lottery system where I'll get a pool tab and I done bought a car thinking I done won something.
Just to get you in the door. That's all it is. Call a loss leader.
A loss leader. So we'll get into how to fix your credit reports next week. But I just wish you want to let you know that critical race theory is worth teaching because we got to talk about credit.
Yeah, it's all about that. All of the above, man. So great subject to continue to discuss with our audience, to inform, to enlighten, to bring out the dark side, if you will, of what we're dealing with.
Because look at the banking system, the subprime system. You can't teach critical race theory around that?
Huh. Yes, you
all
can.
All of our mortgages they gave to people from the underserved communities?
Okay. Yeah.
The car loans, the house loans, how they do the medical billing, double billing people?
Yep. If they
collection agencies?
Yeah, even if they treat you, you know? So, but no, there's a lot of substance we can cover over the next few shows.
Yes, sir.
But that is critical thinking.
Yep. So I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.